Preach about Prahlad Maharaj. So today we're going to read a couple of verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the seventh canto, ninth chapter, that were often quoted by Srila Prabhupada and often expounded upon both in speech and in writing. So we'll speak a little and then we can have some discussion afterwards if there's time. This is the seventh canto, ninth chapter. Text 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Naivo Dvije Paraduratyaya Vataranyas. Svadvīryagāya namahamṛtam agnacitā śocetato vimukacetasa indriyārtha mayā sukhāya bharamudvahato vimuddhān. O best of the great personalities, these are Prahlad's prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev after he has dispensed with Hiranyakashipu. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world. And this is true at present, in the past and in the future. Nonetheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have all been described herein as vimudha, fools. The material world has been described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkhalayam ashashvatam, temporary and miserable. But these fools are trying to turn the material world into sukhalayam, a place of happiness, not knowing how everything acts by the arrangement of material nature, which works in her own way. Prakpite kriyamanani gunai karma sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma ataham iti manyate. Bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities that are in fact carried out by nature. From Bhagavad Gita 3.27. There is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, to punish the demons. Although the asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands, with different types of weapons to punish them. She is carried by her lion carrier, or the modes of passion and ignorance. Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature, but at the end everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. There is a river known as Vaitarani between the material and spiritual worlds, and one must cross this river to reach the other side, or the spiritual world. This is an extremely difficult task. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihiyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Durakaya, this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. The same word, Durakaya, meaning very difficult, is used here. Therefore, one cannot surpass the stringent laws of material nature except by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, although all materialists are baffled in their plans, they try again and again to become happy in this material world. Therefore, they have been described as vimudha, first-class fools. As for Prahlad Maharaj, he was not at all unhappy, for although he was in the material world, he was full of Krishna consciousness. Those who are Krishna conscious, trying to serve the Lord, are not unhappy, whereas one who has no assets in Krishna consciousness is struggling for existence, and is struggling for existence is not only foolish, but extremely unhappy also. Prahlad Maharaj was happy and unhappy simultaneously. He felt happiness and transcendental bliss because of his Krishna consciousness, yet he felt great unhappiness for the fools and rascals who make elaborate plans to be happy in the material world. Now just read the text of the next verse, not the purport. He goes on, My dear Lord Nisringadeva, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, mona vrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. Krishna also emphasizes this in the Bhagavad Gita. Yaidam paramam guyam mad bhakte shavidashyati. One who preaches the glories of Krishna to the masses is very dear to Krishna. Yaidam paramam guyam. And he goes on to say that such a person is the most dear of all. There is no one more dear to the Supreme Lord than one who canvasses on his behalf, or one who preaches his message, acts as his agent. So Prahlad's happiness and unhappiness is very instructive. He's not unhappy for himself because he's actually merged in transcendental ecstasy at every moment. But his sadness is for those who have not the benefit or the privilege to be engaged in thoughts of Krishna at every moment. So he doesn't desire transcendental benefits for himself. And as we see later on, he begs the Lord to forgive his own father, even though he tried in so many ways to kill him. He asks specifically for him to be liberated, for him to be delivered. So that's the quality of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya stressed this quality of compassion and tolerance. Lord Chaitanya is famous for stating this verse, that one should always be very tolerant, more than the tree, forbearing, humble like the grass, and never ask for respect and always offer respect to others. This, he said, you should wear this garland. This is part of his shikshastakam, around your neck always, just like a flower garland. Wear this verse around your neck, just like a flower garland. So Prahlad also exhibited this quality. He was forbearing even though his father tried to kill him, and afterward he was not only forgiving, but he begged the Lord a special favor. He asked him, you can have anything you want, what do you want, I ask you. You can have any benediction. The Supreme Lord was directly asking him. No, I don't want anything for myself. I simply want that others who are suffering, they should get the same sense of Krishna consciousness that I have. Let them be happy. The characteristic, as we know in the material world, is that we are envious of others, or we are plagued by the dual characteristics explained in the Bhagavad Gita as desire and hate. Ichha-dvesha, desire and hate. Those are the characteristics of the material world. We desire to have something we don't have, and we are envious of those who have the thing that we have. Also, we are hankering for things we don't have, and we're lamenting for things. Hankering things we don't have, and for lamenting for things that we couldn't do in the past. So our materialistic nature tells us that I feel happy when others are unhappy, and unhappy when others are happy. That's the nature of the material world. That's our envious, or our lower nature. Our lower nature is when someone is benedicted or having good fortune, we tend to feel sad because we don't have it. And when someone is having misfortune or bad luck, things go wrong, then we tend to feel, well, that's good. That didn't happen to me, so I feel very happy. That's our nature. Therefore, we see so much money is being made in the newspapers or on television, showing so much misery. And everyone's thinking, well, it's not happening to me, so I feel very good. At least it's not happening to me. So this nature is being exploited. Nature, our envious nature is being exploited. It's there, and it's possible to exploit this tendency and become very wealthy by exploiting this tendency. So the purpose of pursuing spiritual life is to overcome this tendency and to be tolerant in all conditions. and to be able to transcend these natural feelings of envy. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing as envy. It's described in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and other parts of the Vedic literature that although there is competition, the gopis are competing for Krishna's favor. One is performing a nice service, making Krishna a flower garland. Another gopi is making some foodstuffs. And they're thinking, she has made a very beautiful garland for Krishna. Let me make some wonderful prasadam, which will please Krishna even more. But this is not material envy, because both want to see the other glorified. It's not that one wishes to see the other diminished. So everything is increasing in the spiritual world. Love for Krishna is increasing. And each devotee in the spiritual world is encouraging the other to increase his or her love for Krishna, to go higher and higher. So as opposed to the nature of material pleasure, spiritual pleasure is increasing in an ever-ending, never-ending upward spiral. Whereas we perform some service or have some good fortune in the material world, it's there for some time, and then it fades away and ends in oblivion. Or there is envy, and someone is trying to take away somebody else's pleasure. But in the spiritual world, everything is increasing. Pleasure is increasing, service is increasing, love is increasing. So Prahlad Maharaj exhibited endless compassion. There was no bounds to his compassion. He wanted everyone in the material world to be liberated. And we read of many other great saints. Today is, in fact, the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur, a great contemporary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is glorified as the Namacharya, the Acharya of the Holy Name. And he also desired that all the living entities would be liberated. This was his fondest desire. And Vasudev Dutt, another contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, 16th century, he also prayed to Lord Chaitanya that I want to accept all the sins of all the living entities all over the universe. I want to accept the reactions from all their sins upon myself. Please do that so they can be liberated. Please transfer all their sinful activity onto my head so that they can then be liberated, and let me somehow suffer for all of them. And Lord Chaitanya was very kind upon him. So in our present environment, we hear how Lord Jesus Christ also suffered. He wanted to suffer for the sins of all of his contemporaries. That's the mood of a pure devotee. He wants to suffer if others can be alleviated from suffering. So this is very extreme. Maybe it's a little difficult to understand for us. But these paragons of Krishna consciousness, like Prahlad, Haridas Thakur, and even Jesus Christ, and so many other great saints and rishis who wanted to see others be happy, to give them Krishna consciousness, were willing to go to great extremes to suffer on their own. When Haridas Thakur, since it's his disappearance day, will relate some incidents about his life, was captured. He was his captors were instructed to beat him to death in public in all the major marketplaces of Navadvip. So we understand, the esoteric understanding of Haridas Thakur is that he is sometimes described as an incarnation of Lord Brahma, or at least a partial incarnation, and sometimes elsewhere as an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, we're reading about here, or a partial incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. So he was the embodiment of compassion. When his captors took him out to cane him in 19 different marketplaces, they beat him with sticks. But he did not go unconscious. He did not die. They took him to one marketplace after the other. The idea was the present government wanted to establish that what he was doing was punishable and therefore establish a precedent. Anyway, they didn't succeed after beating him severely. And then they finally confessed that they were very frightened. They said, if we go back to our master and say that we didn't dispense with you, that you're still alive, we will be killed. What can we do? So taking compassion upon them, he said, that's all right, I don't want you to be killed, I don't want you to suffer. You just throw my dead body in the Ganga, and I will never return, and I will drown, and they will never see me again. So in this way, he was able to save the lives of his captors. And of course, he later was washed ashore, and he survived. But he was willing to suffer, even though they were beating him, and the idea was to kill him, he was willing to suffer just to save them. So devotees are willing to undergo many, many risks and even suffer for the sake of their work. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, who was Srila Prabhupada's guru's father, also a very great Vaishnava, we observed his appearance day just a few days ago, was also very concerned. He wrote many songs where he described the compassionate nature of a devotee, Paradukha Dukhi, one who feels the suffering of others as his own suffering. So as Prabhupada comments here, there are many spiritualists who prefer to seek their own otherworldly salvation or perfection. And the characteristic of Vaishnava is he doesn't want to go back to Godhead alone. Dhruva Maharaj also exhibited the same characteristic. When he was liberated, he insisted that his mother, who put him on the path of liberation and Krishna consciousness, go with him back to Godhead. He refused to go alone. So devotees are very gracious. They personify gratitude. They're so grateful to the Supreme Lord who has so kindly given them Krishna consciousness or lifted them out of the nescience of materialism that they want to devote the rest of eternity to repay them. Yaya tamam prabhajante tam satai vajamiham There is a very wonderful and transcendental, loving, reciprocal relationship between Krishna and his devotees. The devotee, once he realizes that Krishna's mercy is with him, he feels he can never repay the Supreme Lord. It's like Prahlad, he suffered so much, and Lord Nrisimhadev came personally to liberate him. Yet he felt there was, in these prayers he's offering to the Lord, there's no limit to how much he feels he has to repay the Supreme Lord. So it is said that one can never repay one's debt to Krishna or the spiritual master. That's the feeling of a devotee. So because he's giving this instruction, that he wants so many conditioned souls to be relieved of their misery, and he's sending his agents, and his agents feel they can never offer enough souls to go back to Godhead. So devotees feel they want to deliver as many souls as possible to go back to Godhead. As Prabhupada writes, the material nature is very cruel. Even one who becomes very successful in the material world, at some point everything is taken away. Or sometimes it's taken away immediately. So the nature is like that, chanchala, dukkalaya, shashvatam, it's moving up and down, full of duality. And one who is truly intelligent, Nateshu Ramate Buddha, he does not take pleasure in temporary happiness. He does not delight in these temporary things of the senses, the mind, the body, the intellect. This is what distinguishes intelligence from ignorance. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter that describes all the qualities of a devotee, among which are knowledge and being able to distinguish matter from spirit. And anything which is contrary to these are described there as being ignorance. So all of these qualities that are exhibited by devotees, these are called knowledge. All the qualities of knowledge are exhibited. Forbearance, tolerance, humility, simplicity, gravity, perfection, compassion, attachment to Krishna, detachment from the material world. These are the qualities that are seen, evident in the body of a devotee. He's always exhibiting these qualities. And the great fortune to have a pure devotee like Prabhupada who came into our midst was that he exemplified these qualities at every moment, not just when he was teaching or giving some instruction to a disciple, but at every moment these qualities are manifest. So when Lord Chaitanya came also, he's considered the invisible incarnation of Krishna, the incarnation who is not seen, because when he came 500 years ago, he did not play the role of an incarnation of Vishnu, but rather he completely exhibited the role of a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So he's considered the invisible avatar. He was completely absorbed in the role of a devotee. So in that way, even though Krishna came personally 5,000 years ago to speak the Bhagavad Gita and provide the perfection of instruction through the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Chaitanya was even more kind because he came and exhibited everything a devotee should do. He took us through this instruction by his example. He didn't simply order or teach, but he acted out the role of a devotee. He was always very, very dear and acting in a way that was equal to all of his contemporaries. He glorified all of his followers as if they were greater than he was. He was always chanting the name of Krishna. He was always leading big Sankirtan parties, chanting and dancing. And he just went everywhere. As he walked the whole length and breadth of India. And in this way, that distributed love of Godhead, just like a great flood, like a great tidal wave, and gave every breath for this purpose. And sometimes we would see Lord Chaitanya, he came before Lord Jagannath, he prostrated himself, he became unconscious. Sometimes he exhibited the symptoms of a devotee in ecstasy. He would sometimes tremble, laugh, cry. And when he was carrying on his great discourse with Prakasananda Saraswati in Benares, he was asked, "Why are you chanting like this instead of studying Vedanta?" He said that my spiritual master, he told me that you should just chant and dance. That should be your main business. He said, "I was not so intelligent that I could understand Vedanta, but I was told to chant and dance. And as I began to chant the holy name of God and dance in ecstasy, I felt transcendental ecstasy. And somehow this transcendental sound vibration took over my whole body and mind, and I began to chant and dance like a madman." So the assembly in Benares appreciated Lord Chaitanya's presentation and could understand by his behavior and his speech that he was actually a full manifestation of the Supreme Lord. So in this way he traveled all over India and brought love of God like a great tidal wave. And Bhakti Vinod, who was in, of course, the same succession, predicted that one day that devotees would come from all over the world to chant and dance Jai Sachi Nandana in the holy city of Mayapur, or what was then considered part of Navadvip. They would come from every country in the world and chant and dance in ecstasy, regardless of their nation of origin or their race or their social status or their sex or anything. They would come and chant and dance in ecstasy together. Bhaktivinod predicted this over 100 years ago. And he also predicted there would be a great personality who would spread this Harinam, chanting of the Maha Mantra, all over the world. And of course he was benedicted by a great son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who ordered his disciple, Srila Prabhupada, to do just that, inasmuch as he said, "You will please take this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world." So coming down from Krishna himself through Lord Chaitanya, Bhakti Vinod, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, this mood of Prahlad Maharaj is exemplified. To take great risk and undergo great pains and austerities to liberate the conditioned souls, to educate them, to give them the power to distinguish between knowledge and ignorance, between spiritual pleasure and material pleasure. The Bhagavad Gita describes that spiritual, in the 17th chapter, that spiritual intelligence is a little difficult in the beginning. It's almost like poison, but it is nectar afterwards, in the end. And similarly, material life is sometimes very enjoyable in the beginning. You see, when we're young, everything is a very wonderful, new, fresh experience. Then in old age, practically speaking, all the very same things are painful. So the material world is fraught with difficulty. And although pleasurable in the beginning, every pleasure, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, has a beginning and an end. Mateshu Ramate Buddha. So to be able to distinguish, this is what marks a sadhu, to be able to convey that actually everything that we see around us, everything that bodes great happiness and pleasure, wonderful, beautiful nature, so many fine songs, and beautiful creations by man, by nature, are a source of great happiness. So much wonderful poetry and music. But a sadhu is able to distinguish matter from spirit. And all of these wonderful, beautiful things, Krishna says, they all spring from but a spark of my splendor. So a sadhu knows that everything that is wonderful, great, beautiful, that comes from the Supreme Lord. That is just a tiny, tiny fraction of what the Supreme Lord is. And because it's temporary, one becomes very careful not to become attached to that which is temporary. And he seeks his pleasure from within. Because Krishna is very kind, as soon as we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. So, as Krishna says, a little bit of effort on this path brings great rewards. There is no diminution. So we're very fortunate to have had the association of such great souls as Prahlad Maharaj, and through Srila Prabhupada, we're having his association, having the association of Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya. When Prabhupada came to the West, very few people had ever heard of Lord Chaitanya, or even Krishna for that matter. But because of Prabhupada's devotion, his exemplary practice and his devotion, just by the way he worshipped Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, immediately there was an understanding that here is a great personality who is worshipping Krishna or God as he should be worshipped. So devotees will always be characterized not by what they say only, but by how they act and what they do. So great man is measured, yad yad acharati shreshtash tad tadeve taro janahasi yapramanam kurute lokastara navartate, by his deeds. And when his deeds are exemplary, then all the world will pursue them. So the nature of Krishna consciousness is that it is ever expanding. Just like spirit, it is always growing, something we don't have experience of. It continues to grow and expand. So, since a devotee is very humble, his heart is very great. It is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami that a devotee's heart becomes very, very big. It actually begins to melt like butter because he's very humble and very compassionate. So it's a credit and a great privilege to be here to see that so many of you have labored so hard out of your own compassion and devotion to Krishna and compassion for others, following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada to open this nice center and give everybody access. Prabhupada's vision was so scientific. He opened so many centers all over the world, almost 300 now. And even now we have so many little sub-centers, non-hot groups. But he didn't simply wander about, but he created an entire little Hare Krishna universe on this planet with the idea that some millions and millions of books, he set up a system to distribute these books by the millions, literally, and then provide centers where people who became interested could further pursue Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees and the deities or the Supreme Lord. So this is Prabhupada's great genius. He didn't simply give lectures, or didn't simply write a few books, or open a few centers. He did all those things so that the most systematic way possible to give everyone access to Krishna consciousness would be there. And this way, fully exhibited the characteristics of a Mahabhagavat, like Prahlad Maharaj. There's no limit to the pure devotee's mercy. When they think of the condition of suffering humanity, they they actually cry, feeling the same pain as their own. So these great visions and institutions that Prabhupada set up were done simply with that idea, to alleviate the suffering of the living entities. As Prabhupada says, my only concern is for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So as this great Mahabhagavat, Lal Maharaj could see, so even at the age of 5 years old, he was assembling all of his schoolmates who are from very substantially well-to-do families, getting them to chant Hare Krishna in ecstasy, and teaching them that actually this material life is very temporary. Even at great risk to himself,